Welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson. I'm your host for today. Well, today I'm really delighted to be speaking on the phone with Irene Woodbury. She is the author of a darkly funny novel titled Slot Machine Ate My Midlife Crisis. Oh, boy. She claims that midlife isn't for sissies. Well, maybe not, but it sure happens to all of us. Stay tuned and listen into a conversation that I'm going to have with Irene as we talk about issues, both serious and funny, that we have experienced during our transition through midlife. But first of all, I want you to know a little bit about Irene. Irene Woodbury has lived in two of the locations featured in her novel, Los Angeles, where she worked at the Los Angeles Times, IBM, and Time Magazine, and Houston, where she graduated from the University of Houston in 1993. She also got married in Houston. Her husband, Richard, is a retired Time Magazine correspondent. Since 1994, the couple have called Denver their home. And as for midlife crisis, it's his, hers, yours, mine. Irene believes it's time for asking questions. Where am I? Where have I been? Where am I going? Let's sit in a nutshell, she says. But she also says that writing this novel has been her midlife crisis, and we're going to talk a little bit over that. And I guess she also claims that it's not over yet. Hi, Irene.
Yes, hello.
Well, this is just going to be so much fun talking to you about midlife crisis. Oh, boy. It's one of the things that I'm not sure if I went through or still in it or never did. So.
Oh.
And so let's, before we go any further, what is midlife crisis?
Well, to me, it's just a point where you question what you've been doing all these years, and it's a realization that time is passing, and how do you want to spend the future? Do you want to change it up? When we were all teenagers, we had these beliefs about what life would be like, and then we went ahead and we lived our lives, and then there's a point, I think, at midlife where you stop and you look back on all those fantasies and illusions you had when you were 19 or 20, and you say to yourself, what was real, what wasn't? And you reevaluate and decide, how am I going? What do I want to do from here?
From there, it's sort of like this is the first day of my life again. So, you know, Irene, what was interesting is knowing that I was going to be talking to you, I wanted to do a little bit of research because, you know, this whole buzz about midlife crisis, and it just affects all these people. Well, what really surprised me is that when I did some checking and the statistics show that only about 10% of the middle-aged adults actually go through a midlife crisis. I expected like 90%.
Yeah, I would too.
I mean, I was surprised, and it's like, really, only 10%?
Well, I think it's something that most people go through sometimes and are not aware that they're going through it. It's a transitional point. It could be somebody dies, or it could be the change of a job or a career. It's just a transitional point, but you might not actually use the term midlife crisis, even though you actually are having one. And I actually believe that our mothers and grandmothers had them, even though it was not a term that was ever, you know, used in those days. But they certainly went through empty nest syndrome, where their lives were changing and they had to go in a different direction.
Well, what's interesting to me is really a midlife crisis. I thought it was, you know, in my mind, it was like around 45, 50. But when I started doing some research into it, it's actually the range is from 40 to 60.
Well, that doesn't surprise me, because I think there's also research which is really interesting that people in their 40s are more depressed than any other age group because they have so many responsibilities. And they're still young, but they realize that they have their parents to take care of at this point. Then they have their children also, plus their marriages, plus their careers, and there's no time for them. So people in their 40s go through a difficult time where they realize they're still young, but they have all these responsibilities, and they're tied down, and they really can't, they can't really do anything about it. So there's sort of a feeling of being trapped in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the 40s are a tricky time for people. And like I said, research reveals that there is a lot of depression. I didn't know that when I started the book, and my lead character is 45. That was just a coincidence.
Well, you know, also what I'm, in this generation, too, the parents are getting to be, like, or what am I trying to say? Babies are born at an older age. You know, there, it's nothing to have a child in close to being 40. And all of a sudden, I think there must be a point where these women get into, let's say, maybe they are 45, and, oh, my goodness, they still have this little child that maybe is just starting school. And they're starting to reevaluate themselves, too, because this child is still going to be around for a number of years, and their time is ticking, too. And it's like, oh, my goodness, I still have to be a mom for another, you know, 15 years.
Right. I have been at this point where I have been reevaluating my life, and the writing this book was my midlife crisis, because I realized in my 50s, if you're ever going to do it, you're not getting any younger and time is passing, You need to do it now. If you don't do it now, you'll probably never do it, and you'll regret it for the rest of your life. So the book was my midlife crisis, and I was determined to do it and to actually find out if I could come up with the idea and then work for the whole 5 years and then finish it. But as I told you recently, the physical part of writing a book is something I never thought about. It's certainly, you're sitting a lot. There's just this constant sitting. You get really stiff. Your eyes are starting to go. So you're better off in your 20s. It's like parenthood. You're better off physically in your 20s.
Yeah.
But emotionally and psychologically and intellectually, the older you are, the better off you are, because you have that much more to bring to it.
So, Irene, some of the things that tell me, besides writing this book and your midlife, you said that was your midlife crisis, what were some of the other issues that, you know, as you're looking back, were probably, you know, all part of this crisis that supposedly is happening?
Well, just having different needs and your relationships. Can the people who you've known for 30 or 40 years or 20 years, maybe your needs are different. Maybe you need a whole different kind of support for yourself as a career person or as a writer. And maybe the people you've always known don't know you in that way and can't really be there for you the way they've always been in other ways. So it's also a time of looking at relationships. And this is, it's kind of sad, because you reach a point where you realize maybe that some of the friendships you've had for a long time might not necessarily be friendships that are going to be as supportive as they once were, because you've changed and maybe they've changed also. So that's one of the sadder parts of it, is this inevitable kind of reevaluation of friendships. And it can also go into your marriage, where you maybe your needs are different now. Maybe your needs are different, and this person who has always been able to meet your needs can no longer meet them, because you're both different people. And so it can become kind of a very dramatic, sad experience, too.
Exactly. And, you know, we see movies and on TV and even know of people that when they get to that reevaluation, let's say, of the relationship they're in and possibly the marriage, there's quite often a divorce that happens after, you know, 25 years, 30 years, 20 years, because all of a sudden, as you say, the needs are just not the same anymore.
Your needs are not the same, and your options at that point would either be that you would recognize this and try to do something, or that you would pretend it's not happening because you absolutely don't want to make this huge change in your life. That's going to shake everyone's world up. So you hang in there, and you're also unhappy. So it's kind of a sad situation sometimes, because whatever you do is going to cause some turmoil and unhappiness.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, I was just thinking here that I remember when I turned 50, and it was like, yes, because you know what I gave myself permission to do? Wear pants or skirts with elastic into my waist and flat shoes.
Well, that sounds very liberating to me.
I tell you, you know, I couldn't do it when I was 49, and 50 hit me, and it's like, oh, right, this is it. Enough of this.
Yeah, but we're taught that other people's perceptions of us are so important, and we have to look a certain way and be a certain way in order to be treated a certain way. And as I was mentioning to you recently, that Nora Ephron book, I Feel Bad About My Neck. But why should she feel bad about her neck?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if she said, I hate my neck, that would be one thing, but it's almost like she's ashamed of her neck.
Mm-hmm.
I refuse to be ashamed of any part of my body. I may hate parts. I hate parts of my body. I hate my bunion. I hate my belly, and I hate my back.
Yeah.
But I'm not ashamed of them. And I thought her title was so feminine and sweet in a way, because
mm-hmm.
it reveals that she's her neck does not live up to the standards that society has imposed upon us, and so she's making she's almost apologizing for the fact that her neck is not perfect. And I thought, Nora Ephron, my God, you look great. You live with my body for a
right.
day, sweetheart. You're 10 years older than I am. You live with my body for a day, and you will forget about your neck.
Make a trade. That's right.
Yeah, but anyway, Nora Ephron is she's wonderful, because she is a champion of midlife women, and her book, I Remember Nothing, that's the next one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, everybody complained, because obviously she remembers a lot, you know, or she would not have been able to write the book.
Yeah, that's, you know, do you find that sometimes you just sort of like blank out, and it's like, what? I was just going to say something, and I totally have forgotten. Or, you know, open your mouth, and what you were going to say, something else totally comes out, or not even on the topic that you were actually going to talk about.
Well, what I hate is when I walk into a room to do something, and when I get into the room, I can't remember why I went into the room. And I just find that it's very annoying. It's
yeah.
You're aware that time is passing and things are not quite the way they were, but there are so many advantages also to being this age.
Oh yes,
there are advantages to it. And like I said, when you're writing a book, it's. I could never have done this in my 20s. I couldn't even have done it in my 40s, because I would have given up. When you're older, you realize you're going to have a bad day. It's not the end of the world, and tomorrow will be better.
Uh-huh.
And if it isn't, well, then the next day will be better. You have a little more confidence in yourself that you're going to be able to pull it off. When you're younger, you just say, it's terrible. I'm not any good. I don't have any talent. I can't do this, and forget about it. I'll do something else.
Yep.
And you have this belief that life is going to go on forever, so of course you will do it someday.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But when you're older, you realize anything could happen at any given time. You might as well. Now is the time. Now is the time. That's the midlife crisis to me. The realization, now is the time. Do it now, because who knows what's going to happen in a year or two.
Well, you know, what's happening for us too is we're finding, my husband and I are finding, that some of our friends are passing away. And it's
no.
You know, this is not, something is wrong with this picture.
Oh, well, I always tell my husband, we've reached the age where we need to, you know, you can buy a whole box of birthday cards.
Right.
We need the box of condolence cards.
No.
It's just, but that's also a reminder that you don't know what's going to, that's another thing about midlife. What is midlife? I don't know when I'm going to die. If I die in my 60s and I'm in my 50s now, my midlife was in my 30s.
That's right. That's right. Well, you know, I remember my parents had retired and moved out of the community they were in. And they're in Canada, and they changed provinces. And they were young when they retired, and they just had so much fun, a lot of friends. They did all kinds of things. Their social life was just busy, busy, busy. And all of a sudden, my mom says, you know, all our friends are dying off. They're dying off.
Oh, no.
And pretty soon, there was just like, there was nothing. All that socializing was gone.
Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
how old were the people who were dying?
In their 70s.
Isn't that sad? That's awful, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you just never know. And it's later than you think. I truly believe it's later than you think. If you look back on your life at things you did or didn't do, it was later than you thought it was. You should have gone for it. You should have done it.
Yeah.
That's to me, that's the wisdom you get at midlife, where you know. Go for it now, because who knows what will ever happen if you don't. I always envision myself on my deathbed, and how, when I look back on my life, do I want to think, I did what everyone expected me to do. I met all expectations. I was did what everybody else wanted me to do. I don't want to think that. What I want to think is I went for it and I did what I wanted to do, whether people liked it or not, and I'm grateful for that.
Yes. I have that same attitude.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. Join us and hear both well-known and upcoming writers talking candidly about their life experience as well as the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, we strive to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are available 24/7 through direct podcast as well as MP3 download for your convenience. Please visit us on InsideScoopLive.com. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm chatting with Irene Woodbury. She is the author of A Slot Machine Ate My Midlife Crisis. I'm sure some of you can really relate to the number of things we've just chatted about. So stay tuned because there's going to be more juicy stuff to talk about. Irene, I want to talk about menopause.
Yes, ma'am.
I know that you've gone through your menopause. Let's talk about it because I have two.
I went through an early menopause at age 40 because I had undiagnosed gluten allergy and I was too thin, so I didn't have periods and I didn't really pay any attention to that, and neither did my gynecologist. That we just thought, oh well, she's thin, she doesn't get regular periods, no big deal.
Uh-huh.
But I was actually in menopause.
Oh.
I was living in Houston, but and it was hot.
Oh yeah.
So I was actually having hot flashes, but because I was living in Houston for the first time, I wasn't aware that I was having them. I just thought, well, it's hot in Houston. Everybody has hot flashes in Houston.
Right.
So I wasn't aware of it, and I went into the doctor's office one day when I was 41, and he just looked at me and he said, "You're postmenopausal." And I just, you know, you're sitting there in a polka dot smock, and you're looking up and you're going, "What?" And that's how you find out things in life. The doctor tells you you're postmenopausal, and you don't have a clue about your own body. And so recently, and I've been on HRT for 15 years, which is not a good thing. Well, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. We don't really know yet. And I found out recently that when I go off of this, eventually, probably in my 60s, I will then have a second menopause. So I get to have a double menopause. And then the next one is not going to be as easy as the last one.
Yeah.
And I will be older. So I have all sorts of trepidations about that. But also I have breast cancer in my family, so I don't even know if I should be on HRT.
Yeah.
And this is all, we have to choose either our bones or our breasts. And it's a terrible anxiety that we all seem to live with, and we have all this media concentration on the subject of breast cancer, and thank God it's there, but it's also very frightening because it almost seems like an inevitability that you will get this at some point. I think that's another thing that drives you to do what you want to do in life, because you realize that you don't know what will happen with your health in the future, and you might as well just go for it. And also, our mothers didn't live in the world we live in, so we can't even turn to them for help. And genetically speaking, we don't really know all the issues our mothers or fathers had. They weren't all identified by the time they died. And if we live longer, we don't actually know what could happen to us.
Exactly.
So it's a never-ending mystery in a way, our own health. But anyway, this menopause issue and the hormones, where can I turn for help on that?
Well, you know, I was, and still am very much into alternative health. And in my early 40s, I went to see an alternative medical doctor, and he prescribed progesterone cream for me. And, you know, I'm still taking it. I'm 65. My menopause came at 50. I had no symptoms. The only symptom I had was my period stopped. I have no idea what hot flashes are. I have no idea of any of that. And I really think, you know, for me, what really worked is a progesterone cream, and I'm still using it. And from what I understand, because it's a natural product, I'm just going to use it for the rest of my life.
Oh, that sounds fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
And
so
they say that if you're not taking something orally, that the risk for cancers developing from the hormones is less because your liver isn't processing it. If it's a patch or if it's something on your, if it's transdermal, if it's on your skin.
Yeah.
I asked my doctor that recently, and she just looked at me like she didn't know what I was talking about, but this is what I have heard. It's all so confusing.
I know, I know. And I think it's because maybe just there's so much unknowns still. And, you know, a lot of beliefs come into that, too, as to some believe that, let's say, you know, I'm using progesterone cream, that that just doesn't work. Well, it worked for me. And, yes, it may not work for somebody else. It just may not. And so I think each one of us is very individual. So did you buy a new car, a sporty car? Did you buy a convertible or anything like that when you...
I have a 27-year-old car. And we love this car. This car was in the first oil crisis, and whatever it was, and it's going through the second one. And the other night, we almost got into a car crash.
Oh, no.
By a couple seconds. And the reason we didn't get hit is that we were in this old car that doesn't go very fast. And I said to my husband, if we had been in one of these other cars that's going real fast, like we see all around us, we were going through an intersection and somebody made a left-hand turn. They came out of nowhere, and they just went right in front of us. And if we had been a few seconds ahead, we would have hit them.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
and
so
probably had no damage to your car because
we
by the time...
by a couple inches.
You know, and the other car probably would really be a wreck, and yours would probably, because 27 years ago, they were pretty darn heavy cars. So...
Well, I don't like to be in a car. I get a little nervous in a car, but I have a 27-year-old car, and my husband's is 25. It's horrible. We're so embarrassed, but we love these cars. We're embarrassed by these cars, but we love these cars, and we see no reason. And also, now we find out it would be much more expensive to have a new car because of the insurance.
Yeah. Exactly.
And all the fees, the licensing fees.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're saying, well, why should we do it? We love these cars.
Yeah.
Why should we give up our cars to get a nice new car when we don't want one and it would be more expensive anyway?
So, Irene, do you have any goals? Any goals for now until whenever that is?
Well, I you know what? I would love to have more time for friends.
Ah, yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, I do. And, you know, I think things are kind of shifting back because I noticed that we got into our busyness and, you know, our friends, well, we just sort of, yeah, they were friends, but we didn't do anything. But I noticed that we're shifting back and a lot of other people are shifting back. And I noticed Anderson Cooper in his new program in the afternoons, he's encouraging people to eat together, families to eat together.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm thinking, yes, because that's you know, sort of a thing of the past.
Absolutely, because everybody's going in a different direction.
Yeah, yeah.
And as I always tell my husband, my step-grandchildren, they couldn't even pick me out of a lineup if they had to at this point. You're so tied down with this book, but just friendships with women.
Yes.
Something that in midlife we forget the men. We finally have wised up and we realized men can only do so much. No matter how great they are, there's only so much they could do, but women provide this nurturing.
Yes.
And your mother is most likely has passed on at this point in life.
No, mine is actually still alive. But...
Oh, you're a lucky lady. How old is your mother?
She's 83.
Well, she's young. I mean,
that's
terrific. That's another endorsement for having children at a younger age.
Exactly. Exactly.
She's 83 is pretty young still.
Mm-hmm,
that's the new 50. No.
That's right. And she is, let me tell you.
This is the new 50. So we don't have mothers to turn to. So I think we desperately need our girlfriends and we need that nurturing. And as I said, you realize at this point in life, men can only do so much. that thrill of having somebody, flirt with you and be attracted to you, that only goes so far. Then you need your girlfriends to talk to actually, because men and women are so different.
Yeah.
Newsflash, we're just so different.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not their fault. It's not our fault. Nobody is at fault here. We just are different. 90% of the divorces could probably be prevented if people just realized this: a man is not like a woman.
Well, I always equate it to pets. There's a dog and there's a cat. There's a male and there's a female. It's like they're pets. They've got four legs. They've got fur. And then it stops there.
Exactly right, because a dog is more giving.
Oh, yeah. And the cat, well, whatever.
No, but you're exactly right. But I just think we grow up thinking, well, why aren't men like us? And trying to train a man and demand that a man be the way we are, and they can't do it.
I know.
So it's, I'm saying this now, but I'm of course I make demands on my husband that are just ridiculous. And at some point I realized, my God, well, you're asking him to be a woman. I mean, forget it. He can't do what you want him to do. It's not his fault.
You got it.
But girlfriends and more time for going to the movies and just taking a trip that doesn't involve work. Remember that? And weekend. Do you remember weekends?
Yes. Yeah.
Isn't that a foreign concept?
It is a foreign concept.
You know, because of the Internet, we are all contacting each other on weekends now, and there's more work.
Yeah.
So people, when you're a writer, especially, you know, it doesn't stop.
Yeah.
The weekends, people, as you know, they you're getting emails all weekend. And, of course, you say, well, if I do it now, I won't have to do it Monday. So, of course, I'll do it now.
Exactly, because Monday ends up being such a heavy day. It brought us into Tuesday. So,
but also just to take it easy and actually think about your health and the stress of life and try to just, slow down a little bit and just smell the roses a little bit in this world and stop, just being quite so, everything is a little bit too frantic.
Yep, and I'm so for unfranting it. Is that a word? I don't know.
Well,
but we'll make it up. We can do anything we want to now in this life and over.
You've coined, yes, absolutely.
Yes.
So those my goals are to just not have too many goals for a while, except to just slow everything down and kind of take care of other people a little more and myself. And now that the book is done and I don't have that tremendous pressure on me at all times, because for 5 years, I disappeared from everybody. I disappeared from everybody's life basically for 5 years. It's a little rude, but... But like I said, you realize, I think when you're younger, that would have been very upsetting, because you would think, oh, no, she's mad at me and he's mad.
Right.
But then you realize it's now or never. I'm doing this and that's it.
Yeah.
If people are upset, we'll have to deal with that later.
Thank you so much, Irene. This has been such a pleasure talking to you. And listeners, we've just talked about all kinds of things here, about women and midlife and menopause and, friendships and actually having some advantages. And I just really encourage you to check out Irene Woodbury's book, A Slot Machine Ate My Midlife Crisis. And I tell you, it is a hoot. It is a hoot. And so, for those of us that are in it or went through it already, can just read it and reflect back and have a good old time laughing and some ahas too. So,
yeah, but what I love about the book is it shows the anxiety.
Yeah,
this person is not just having a ball. She is, there's a lot of anxiety and there's a lot of anger and there's a lot of anxiety and just a tremendous amount of just soul searching. And,
well, the real thing, reality, actually.
Reality.
Yeah.
So it's not a romp. It really shows the anxiety. I think that's what makes it a good book, is that it's a realistic.
Exactly.
It's a first person account, and she just lets you know what her emotions are. I love the fact that she's so open and just tells you exactly what she's feeling. And some people don't like that, but maybe others will. But I think most people will, because she is honest about the way she feels.
Well, the thing is too, Irene, that even though this is a fiction, and it, But there's so much reality in it that many, many of us can parallel to it.
Well, you know what? You know what is really funny? One reviewer, she just said, "I don't believe in divorce, but I really feel that Roger and Wendy should get divorced." Oh my God. These characters are not real, okay? So she said,
yeah.
I don't believe in divorce, but these two really need to get divorced. And I thought, well, they
That's
can't get divorced
funny.
Because they're not real.
It's too funny.
Yeah, but I just appreciate that. You know, that she thought they were. I actually think they are, too. I know the characters better than I know people in my own life these days.
Well, you've been with them for a long time. So, again, Irene, thank you so much. This has been a hoot.
I know. It has been my pleasure, Irene. You are a wonderful. It's Irene and Irene in the Irene
I know.
Interview.
This is great. And listeners, do check it out. Again, we've been talking to Irene Woodbury, and the name of the book is A Slot Machine Ate My Midlife Crisis. I encourage you to check it out, especially if you're a female.
And they can look at my website if they want.
Yes, and that is?
www.irenewoodbury.com, all lowercase.
There you go, irenewoodbury.com. Thanks for listening. This is Irene Watson with Inside Scoop Live. Bye for now.